You're muted, Will.
I'm out of practice. What can I say?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's 1:30. Let's call the meeting to order. This is the May 9th, 2022 Commissioner meeting for Clallam PUD. Welcome. Let's go ahead and take comments from the public. Nicole, would you take care of that?
Let's see. Let's give it a second here. I don't see anybody raising their hand on the screen or virtually, so I don't believe we have any.
Okay. All right. Our first item is approval of the consent agenda. This is for May 9th, 2022. Do I have a motion or comments or questions?
I move that we accept the consent agenda.
I'll second the motion.
It moved and seconded to accept the consent agenda for May 9th, 2022. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. Thank you. Agenda revisions. Sean, do we have any?
We do. We have one. Item 5B under business items. Mike Hill will be presenting in place of Doug Adams.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Our first item here is bid number 220803, award recommendation for pole inspection and treatment. Bill, I think you have that one.
Yep, this is for the district's 2022 pole inspection treatment and report on an unspecified number of electrical transmission distribution web poles. Project has not to exceed amount of $137,132. The lowest bid was bid as an exception, and it did not meet the district's specified requirements as outlined in Section 3, Specifications 3B of the work to be performed. Pacific Pole Inspection, LLC from Kelso, Washington, is the lowest pre-qualified responsible bidder to meet the requirements outlined in Section 3, Specifications 3B. Tabulation of all bid is attached. I'd like to request a motion and second vote to proceed with the bid award to Pacific Pole Inspection of Kelso, Washington.
Okay, thank you, Bill. Do we have a motion? Questions? Discussion?
I move that we accept bid number 220803 for pole inspection and treatment.
I second that motion.
It's been moved and seconded to authorize the district staff to proceed with bid award recommendation memo for bid number 220803 to Pacific Pole Inspection, Inc. of Kelso, Washington, for a not-to-exceed amount of $137,132. This contract is for 2022 pole inspection, testing, and reporting on an unspecified number of electronic transmission and distribution wood poles. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion passes. Next item is bid number 220805, award recommendation for the Forks substation upgrade. Mr. Mike Hill.
Hello. Yeah, Doug's out sick, so I will take care of this. So we went out to bids to rebuild Forks substation. Coming back, Olympic Electric, a local contractor from Fort Angeles, was the lowest pre-qualified responsible bidder with a total base bid of $509,000. So we recommend that the district let the contract to Olympic Electric to perform the work.
So see, Patelco is about three times the low bid. Is there a story behind that?
Yeah, sometimes I think they just throw something out there. If it works out, great. If not, they didn't put a lot of time into it.
Yeah, or maybe they just loaded up with work. Who knows?
Yeah.
Okay, do we have a motion on this one?
I move that we accept bid number 220805 for the Forks substation upgrade.
I second the motion.
It's been moved and seconded to authorize staff to proceed with bid award recommendation memo for bid number 220805 to Olympic Electric Company, Inc., of Port Angeles, Washington, for $509,000. This contract is to replace and bring up to current standards the equipment of Fork Substation located at 441 West East Street with an engineer's estimate of $547,080. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. All right, our next item is BPA post-2028 contract discussion. Staff, do you have any comments? And then we'll jump in with the commissioners, or vice versa.
I don't have any comments today on that, Will.
I saw where Bonneville was going to come out with their position paper at the end of the month, and this is not going to be responding to the public power position paper. This is going to be just a clean sheet, and they're going to put theirs forward. I assume we will converge on a solution at some point. Nothing else?
Nothing for me.
My goodness. Jim, you have anything?
Well, WAPAG had a meeting the other day that I attended, and they talked about several things. So I can – one of them was the post-2028 next steps and so forth. And anyway, they walked us through that. I guess I'll just save the rest of it for later, some of the issues they discussed in the commissioner's report. But nothing – I mean, it's just the same timeline we've seen before, so I didn't see anything dramatically different.
Okay. Thank you. All right, we'll move on to correspondence and communications. Sean, do we have any?
Yeah, I got two things today. The first, I received a letter from Calix PUD. I'll just read a couple of paragraphs here. It says, on behalf of the Calix PUD Board of Commissioners, Calix PUD and the residents of Calix County would like to extend our gratitude for the mutual aid received from Clallam County PUD. Thanks to the hardworking crews from Clallam, we were able to restore power to the majority of the customers within 24 hours and to all customers within 48. It is regional partnerships like mutual aid where we can call on our neighbors when in need, and they will show up to lend a helping hand. That makes us proud to be a public utility. We appreciate your commitment to public power and the commitment to public power customers across the region. And that was signed by their board president and general manager. So that was a nice letter that we got in the mail today.
It's always good news and very appreciated. And when we need mutual aid, we get it as well. So it's all part of being part of the PUD system.
Definitely. The other item I had today revolved around COVID. So I just kind of want to give you guys an update of where things are at here at the utility. So we started our weekend, we were notified that our answering service had an outbreak at their facility and they were unable to operate. So we had to call in CSRs over the weekend on Friday and Saturday to man the phones here at the district. And then internally, we had an employee in the main office who tested positive, and by the end of the weekend, we had 7 additional cases. So This is the first at-work transmission in about the 2.5 years since COVID started. We had a really good run, but unfortunately our customers are going to notice a pretty big gap this week in our operations. Our customer service unit is operating about half staff right now, and so customers are going to experience longer than normal phone times, and we're just asking them to be patient with us as we try to get back up to full staff, hopefully sometime next week. So what I'm going to ask you guys today is, considering – we're an essential service, I would like to recommend that we use the county dashboard as sort of our gauge here. And whenever cases are over 200 per 100,000, that we close to the public and operate virtually for our meetings. That's considered the high-risk category. And then whenever we're below the 200 mark, we can open back up to the public and then hold our commission meetings in person again. I think using that county dashboard is a decent metric to go off of. The only real problem with it is that we all know that cases are being severely undercounted right now because of all the at-home tests, but at least that dashboard would give us a gauge.
Sounds like a good approach.
I agree.
Sean, does that how did that metric, that number, track maybe where we were several months ago when we were going virtually? Did we drop below that number and then go virtual? I mean, go meeting in person, or you don't really know, or is it just you're using that benchmark now?
Yeah, I'm using that benchmark now. We internally sort of followed the county's metrics throughout the entire pandemic. The difference now, or from the beginning of the pandemic, is that most of the testing was done, you know, the PCR test to the hospital, and so the reporting was a lot more robust, I guess you could say. Now with all the at-home testing, a lot of cases are not getting reported. So it's what we have to go off of in the county.
Yeah, Sean, I would add that when we opened back up, it was after we fell below 200 cases.
Right.
We continued to fall to about close to 100, actually. And then it started rising again about a little over three weeks ago. And we flew past 200, is now up to over 400 by the latest numbers. So there's a substantial increase. And as you said, for the last couple months, the reporting is substantially underreported, we believe. But it is probably a reasonable benchmark, as objective as we can get.
So what about the governor's directives? Have they all expired, or where does that stand?
No, the state of emergency is still in effect.
Yeah, okay.
Sean, do we have any idea what our percentage of vaccinated employees are vaccinated and boosted and all that stuff?
I don't know what that exact percentage is. I see Jamie is on here. I'm not sure if she can maybe add to that, Jamie, if you know the number.
I don't know the number. We early on were able to offer some vaccination clinics, so we were able to get a head count there. And then it's just been a voluntary basis if employees wanted to notify us that they were vaccinated. So we don't have an accurate number of vaccinated employee percentage.
Okay, thanks, Jamie. Hey, well, have we done anything lately to encourage people to get boosters and all this kind of stuff?
We have. I believe Nicole has, when there's been booster clinics out, we have done information through the healthcare. So yeah, people are aware of them, and kind of from hearsay, I would say that most that were interested have taken advantage of it.
Well, at one time we were sending in copies of our vaccination certificates.
Correct. Yeah, that kind of coincided with when the governor, when they could stop wearing masks if they provided, but that was a real short duration before. John might have to help me if we had to go back to wearing masks or if we were able to just transition and not wearing masks from there. But yeah, so I have some of those to include in those numbers, but I'm sure there are people that have gotten vaccinated since then.
Yeah. So we're going to go to virtual meetings. What about masks in the building here, Sean?
We have an internal discussion on that plan for tomorrow. We're also asking employees at the main office here where the outbreak is to test every single morning before they come into work and provide a copy of the test result to Human Resources.
Okay. All right, any more on that? It sounds like we've got a plan.
No, I don't have anything else.
Sean, let me see if I understand what you just said. So every morning, every employer, anybody that comes into the building has to have a test that morning and show the results before they can come into the building?
Our employees, we're asking our employees to test, yes. And we're closed to the public right now because of the metric is over 200, so it wouldn't apply to the general public, just our employees.
that's a lot of tests. Where are these test kits coming from that they
The testing became available, the district procured several thousand tests for employees, and we have enough tests to get through this outbreak.
Yeah, so basically the tests were procured when it looked like it was going to be mandatory testing. The court decision overruled mandatory testing a number of months back.
Okay, thanks.
So I think that plan kind of demonstrates that we're protecting the employees and the public. So I think it's a great way to go. Okay, Commissioner reports. Jim, do you want to? You had something earlier. Go ahead.
Yeah, the WOMPAG covered a whole bunch of different subject areas, about six or seven. I mentioned provider of choice. So one of the things they did on provider of choice, they talked about an issues utility self-assessment. Sean or John, is that something that we have our hands on now and have worked on or filled out or what?
I'm sorry, Jim, what was that?
The utility self-assessment for provider of choice that WOPAG provided at the last meeting. Have you guys seen that?
I have not personally seen that, no. John, have you seen that?
No, unfortunately, I missed the last meeting, but I will go back and look at the materials and look for that. It's called a self-assessment or utility of self-assessment? What's the terminology?
Yeah, in the package, it was shown as attachment A, but I don't actually see it on the briefing that I'm looking at right now.
I'll go back and look for it.
Yeah, okay, thanks. I didn't see that, Jim.
All right. They also talked about an update, BPA update, and long-term hydro generation forecast. I think Rick might have had something to say about that. Market initiatives with EDAM and markets, Western Resource Adequacy Program update, financial plan refresh, and the BP24 rate case. And it is kicking off now, so we get to enjoy that for the next 18 months. So that was the WOPAG meeting. I also attended an EDC weekly call, and in that discussion, I talked at length with Colleen about an initiative the state of Washington's got with the Department of Energy of establishing hydrogen development hubs and so forth. Sean, John, I don't know if you guys are up to speed on that. Maybe you've already been contacted by Colleen or some other folks, but the state of Washington is working for an application. There's going to be like four hub zones or five in the country or something, and they're pushing obviously for one in Washington, and of course the EDC, Colleen, is pushing to have it established in Port Angeles. And I guess it has some interesting and helpful ramifications for the PUD if that were to happen. But I don't know the level of effort it'll take to have a winning proposal.
Colleen sent that to John and I last night. I think it was around 7 o'clock last night. We got that email from her.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a string there from the Department of Commerce, I believe, talking about the hydrogen project or grants.
All right, good. Well, anyway, yeah, take a look at that. I started looking at it on Friday as well. Oh, that's all I got, Will.
Okay, thank you. Rick?
Since last meeting, attended a small modular nuclear reactors presentation, which probably would have been good, but they used an app for the presentation I had never seen before, and it took about half of the presentation to figure out how to get into it. So I gave them some good feedback on, their apps need to be a little more user-friendly. There was a Northwest River Partners meeting I attended on the 5th, which was really interesting. And I was also participated in the WOPAG meeting, and to me, the most interesting thing there was the update on the long-term hydro generation. I certainly understand some of the logic that Bonneville is using to argue for reducing the number of water years. Because the argument being that there's been a structural change given climate change that makes the previous water years no longer applicable. I am always loath to get rid of data, but I think there's good logic in behind that. That's all I've got, Will.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, on your point about the app, it's just amazing that all these organizations don't standardize on Teams or Zoom. I had that same experience where I ran into one I'd never heard of before, and it was very difficult to get into it. Okay, well, I went over to Energy Northwest. They had a joint executive board and board of directors meeting. During that meeting, the elections were held for the executive board. This would be for the five inside directors on the executive board. Linda Goth withdrew her name from that election. And so there was only one open seat, and then all the incumbents. Kurt Knapp was elected to Linda's previous seat, and I was reelected, and all the incumbents for additional 4 years, which leaves me in a position of 4 years as on the executive board plus chairman for another 2 years. After that, we had a CEO report, talked about the PNNL's battery development facility building, which they're building there in Richland. They're following that and collaborating with PNNL. The talked about the enhanced power uprate of Columbia. This is where a number of key components of the plant would be upgraded to produce more power, and that's somewhere between 200 and 300 megawatts. Later I'll talk about, we went down to PPC and made a presentation. The CEO and myself, so we all defer talking about that. But right now the estimate on that uprate is about $400 million. Has a ROI of 10%. And a payback of 9 years. And of course, what's coupled with that is the license extension. It will pay back before the present license expires, but if we actually renew the license, then it would look very, very attractive. In fact, it would be silly not to do it. We got the chief nuclear officer's report, 135 days online. No economic dispatch. As part of some of this infrastructure stuff and coming out of the federal government, $6 billion was appropriated for support of economically distressed nuclear plants. Of course, Columbia doesn't fall into that category, but it will keep some of these nuclear plants online. We had a good presentation from our general counsel on ethics, and talked about preventing conflict of interest, where you direct contracts as a governance board member, council member, or whatever, directing work to your own benefit of your company or yourself personally. And we're going to be signing code of ethics documents shortly for the executive board and board of directors. What else? Talked about the performance of Packwood and Nine Canyon and so on. Horn Rapids that's the solar farm, which is backed up partially by a battery. It's performing well. Then the new one, Ruby Flats, this is 150 megawatt new solar project that Energy Northwest is working with a developer to develop. They're marketing it and releasing property to the developer. It'll be energized in 2023. There was a lot of excitement about this. We put in for a piece of that here at Clallam. But what happened was the firming and transmission costs drove the cost up to about $40 a megawatt. So there's some trepidation on part of some of the people that were initially interested. The electrification of transportation, EVITA, which is the Energy Northwest electrification, let's see, what do they call it? It's electric vehicle infrastructure and for transportation. 18 stations are coming soon. We've got a number of those along Highway 12, and there's been application for funding for Highway 101, which would provide fast chargers around the 101 loop. They did an employee survey at Energy Northwest and got very good participation. 75 to 85% of the employees were favorable in that survey. What else we talk? Oh, you talked about solar from that Ruby Flats project. You know, it's kind of advertised that solar is down to about 2 cents. But it's actually 3.5 cents at the bus bar. It does not include shaping or backup and transmission. And so as the Ruby Flats thing demonstrates, that price gets a little bit more. There was some discussion about the need for an RTO. I'll talk about that further. Let's see what else we got here. Talked about the 101 loop, the contract high watermark, Rick talked about that. That's a view that will be more tier one power available if that what's proposed. And so, you know, to handle load growth. There was a report given by a representative to, the PPC and the Northwest Conservation and Power Council. Those two organizations are going to get together and talk about the Snake River Dams issue that's going on. Also some discussion about Blue Wolf. This is the green aluminum plant that's being proposed in Whatcom County. And Blue Wolf, got my colors mixed. Blue Wolf has got a big public relations campaign and lobbying the legislature. It comes under this large single load thing, and 400 megawatts for Whatcom would be a bit of a problem. We talked about the BPA workshop. Okay, from there, went down to the Public Power Council in Portland at the invite of Scott Sims, believe it or not, and he's actually inviting me as chairman of the Executive Board of Energy Northwest and our CEO. And we gave a presentation on the enhanced power uprate, as well as talking about license extension. It was very well received. This was their first in-person meeting, and that may change, but it was kind of like a high school reunion. It was very, very well received. Good to see those people. Prior to the executive committee meeting, which happened on Thursday, the Wednesday, we had a presentation, a forum by the Southwest Power Pool. The Southwest Power Pool is moving west. And they're in somewhat competition with Cal ISO as a regional RTO. They told a pretty good story, to tell you the truth. They referred to Cal ISO as Brand C. So anyway, it's They talked about opening an office in the West, and they were asked whether they would open in Portland. And the lady who was the president of Southwest Power Pool said she had toured Portland, and they had reservations. So understandable. Portland is in turmoil these days. Anyway, I guess that's all I have.
Hey, Will.
Yeah.
Got a question on the expansion of the new Columbia Generating Station. You said it pay off in 9 or 10 years or whatever. Is that based on the same rate of as the rest of the power plant is now at whatever that is? Is that math done based on the $42 or whatever it is a megawatt hour?
Well, yeah, it's based on the 200 megawatts or so additional output from the plant. Now, that's going to take some capital cost initially, but then it goes negative for the life of the license. And then if you extend the license, it's that 9% payout or recovery, or I'm sorry, 10% ROI, that was going to be realizable in 9 years under the present license. And so the so it looked very attractive if we extend the license. It looks attractive now at 10% ROI.
But the 10% is based on $42 a megawatt hour.
It's based on whatever the budget is presently. Okay. So.
All right. Hey, Rick, I have a question. You mentioned you went to Northwest River Parchers, and you had a very interesting discussion. Can you mind sharing what was very interesting?
Well, we talked about the new TV commercials and then some polling that went along with that.
And what commercial is that?
Pro Snake River Dams.
Okay. Do they have a copy of it or something that we can look at?
Maybe. I don't know. It's on TV if you want to see it.
What am I supposed to do? Just turn the TV on and wait till it pops up? What channel? Well, it'd be neat to see what they're saying.
Yeah, I've talked to a number of people who have seen those ads, and they got supposedly they're pretty impressive. Okay, anything else on the commissioner reports? All right, moving on to staff reports. We have a website discussion follow-up. Nicole?
Yes, thank you. So we looked into the question of how many records requests we've been receiving for specifically the minutes, and in the past 3 years, we haven't had any. Historically, what we've done is just kind of kept a rolling 12 months of minutes on the website because it's a lot of effort, more effort for a customer to keep scrolling through the web page to find what they're looking for. Once you get beyond 12 months worth, it's really cumbersome. And the most efficient way for a customer to actually find something, if they're looking for something specifically, rather than opening up each set of minutes and reading it, is just to do a records request. So we refer them to there because that way they can specify both a date range, a keyword, and it really helps our records department to drill down and deliver exactly what they want. But as it stands, nobody has been requesting the minutes. So, I think that's just the most efficient way to do things is people who missed a meeting recently can go ahead and go online and see the minutes and listen to the audio files. And if they want something specifically, we can help them find it in a far more efficient and relevant manner.
Nicole, it's been more than 12 months. I mean, I just was on it a couple months ago when I went all the way back to April of 2020. And I find it very handy to be able to go back because having, been, commissioner for 3 years and I'm interested in something we talked about a few years ago, it's fairly easy for me to go back. I'm not too surprised you didn't get a bunch of requests because if we're keeping it for at least 2 years, that's probably most people's, they just go look. It was on the website, so they didn't ask us for anything. So I don't know that I'd be surprised that we didn't get any requests. But I think the problem with people requesting, doing kind of like a FOIA thing, is you know, if they don't get the wording right or whatever they're looking for, it might be difficult or so forth. But I don't, since you said it was an arbitrary decision a month or so ago by you, assumedly, I don't understand why can we, you know, can at least keep it for 2 years.
You certainly could. I mean, I go through and I clean it up periodically. I always kept the rolling 12 months. I don't think I relayed that. I was doing that to T, and so it probably built up over time there. I think, you know, we might have had 18 months or something, but it, I go through periodically and just clean it up so it's not so many pages long. But we certainly could let it build up to that. Moving forward, that would be very
okay. Anyway, I just think it's, you know, it's an act of transparency to, you know, leave them up there for several years so that people can go back and look at, you know, if they're comparing strategic plans or something like that, or they remember like the AMI meetings or something and they wonder, well, what did we say, you know, 3 years ago?
And I think our records department is probably one of the leaders out of the PUDs, and they're very helpful in finding relevant information, because I've had customers contact me wanting a copy of something before, and I know where to find it, but for somebody to have to page through 5 or 6 years worth of minutes, there's more of a chance that they would not find something or miss something than if they specifically just ask the records department for it, because they're very good at their responsiveness.
Yeah, I appreciate it. They're looking for some specific piece of information, but I think there are people that have participated in meetings in the past on issues and so forth and remember the meetings and like I do, and, you know, say, well, what did we say? Where's that document of, you know, a couple of years ago? But anyway, maybe I'm just, you know, I don't know. I just believe that it's, you know, it's handy to have the minutes there for people that are trying to go back and see what they recall about a meeting in the past.
We can certainly do that moving forward. That would be really easy, and I'd probably have to just build a page per year so it didn't become unwieldy. But we're about Chip and I are working on applying a new website template anyway, and so that would be something that we could then start rolling out as soon as we apply that and see if we can't make it somewhere where we can have blocks for per year or something so that people aren't having to scroll forever.
Well, they have dates on them, but I didn't find it that difficult because they're just all stacked up chronologically.
I think that the minutes are not verbatim who said what and so on. They're usually action items.
They're action, yes.
And so I think data requests would be very easy to execute. It sounds like if you're going to load years of minutes on the website, that's going to be a lot of information overload. So I think I would say 1 year or maybe 18 months at the most.
It would be cumbersome going backward, but going forward, since, you know, they just get loaded after every approval of minutes at a meeting, then moving forward, it would be easy just to let it, you know, expand into 18 months or so. And
so you're saying starting now, you start putting it on,
yeah,
and then go to 18 months and then start rolling along.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
you could easily do that.
Okay, that sounds okay. Okay, is that all you had, Nicole?
Yep.
All right, BPA transmission outage duration, John.
Okay, I'm going to make an effort to share my screen. Is everyone seeing presentation BPA outages overview?
Yes.
Okay. I believe last meeting, I believe Rick, you started off, made an inquiry about BPA outages for, you know, BPA customers in general. You know, basically to get some kind of comparative of where we stand versus other BPA customers. And we were able to proceed, and we did make a request to BPA for them to provide historic outage information for all of their customers. And as part of that process, they actually gave us more than what we expected. They gave us web access to the BPA outage information since 1999, and I'm going to show you what that looks like real quick. which we didn't have this access before, but we could go and take a look at any year going back to 1999 to the current year. And basically, it gives all customer feeders under BPA devices that experience an outage, the reason, planned outage, unplanned outages, the causes, the length of time it was out. And then they also include BPA-owned segments with similar information. Of course, we don't necessarily have much idea what these segments are connected to and where they fall in their network. But we certainly can pick out individual customers through the information in the description. So it's actually a fairly nice, convenient tool to look at other utilities. They also provided a summary reports for BPA outages associated with customer points of delivery between 1/1/15 and 12/31/19, which evidently took some effort on their part to do some consolidation of information. We do know now that BPA has 581 customer feeder segments associated with their outage reporting. And when we did our look at this, we ignored the four sections accounting for 64% of BPA outage minutes. These are sections that is not unusual to have all for weeks at a time. And you don't get a good picture if you include those in the analysis. Here locally, there's two BPA transmission segments that serve six normally energized Clallam PUD segments, as well as one de-energized PUD segment that serves as a backup. So, in short, if you go to the BPA website, you see their overview of their transmission system by voltage class, the red being the 345 and 500 kV systems. The orange, the 230 kV system, and the green, the 115 kV system. Of course, if you're looking up here in our area, there's a parallel 115 running with a 230 line until you get to Port Angeles, and from then on it's a 115 line out to Sappho. This blue line is actually I believe it's a 700 odd DC voltage line. This is the actual intertime multiple lines, 500 kV.
So, John, the outages on the west end, is that the green line up there?
Outages from Port Angeles feeding Sappho that puts two of our feeders out. And if I go to the next slide, it'll kind of explain it. So, basically, there's two segments of BPO transmission line. This green section here is two 230 kV lines. It runs from Fairmont to Port Angeles. And from there, there's a single 115 kV line that runs to Sappho. So those are the two BPA lines. And we have BPA customer lines, six of them. The two out west are the number one Sappho to Clallam feeder that goes up to CQ and Nea Bay. And then we have another feeder going to Forks and serving that area. We also have a 115 now line from Silverado, which is a point of delivery, that back ends the central feeder that is still 69 kV. And this is part of our transmission upgrade to 115 kV that's going to be completed here in a couple years. So that'll become a loop section, much like the Port Angeles Eastern feeder, back ending the Happy Valley point of delivery. So these are two more sections. And we also have a backup feeding from Discovery Bay to Blinn, and gives us the opportunity to loop this section through transmission that's actually through Jefferson PUD now. It used to be ours. We transferred it back in 2015, I believe. So these are the six segments fed off of two BPA segments for which we're able to totalize outage information. Okay, so just looking at the 2015 to 19 outages and only looking for what BPA is responsible for, You need to know a few details about this. You can't just look at the data, but this table gives you an idea of outage counts and what portion of BPA outages our utility sees. Now, if we look at the west end here, these are the most problematic feeders. During that five-year period, there were 7 unplanned outages. And for Silverado, there were a total of 8. But you have to remember that when we do restorations, BPA puts these out at Silverado for a short period of time, 10, 15, 20 minutes to make the restoration. So not all of these are outages at Silverado. Most of them are part of a restoration, which Silverado customers were placed out of power for relatively short periods. But sometimes, if the entire segment is out and the fault is between Port Angeles and Silverado, yes, all three of these feeders are affected by that outage. On the eastern side, we have the central feeder currently feeding one substation, and then we have the loop between Port Angeles and Happy Valley. And it'll show 7 outages here at Happy Valley, but a lot of those outages do not affect customers because there's an outage on their system. Even if it's unplanned, it allows us to switch between the two points of delivery. So if you just look at outage events, it's probably not a very good comparative. In BPA system, they had, during the five-year period, 2856 outages, corresponding to 4.95 per feeder. PUD outages affecting our feeders were 31, corresponding to 4.43 outages per feeders. And like I said, some of the events are part of restoration efforts or planned non-availability. Probably the best comparative.
John, before you leave that, so that's saying that we have less outages than the system total. Is that right?
Yeah, for counts, yes. But when you get to minutes, we have substantially more than the BPA
well,
total.
Well, that's the travel time for the Bonneville crew, I guess.
Yeah, and the train troubleshooting, et cetera. So if we look at our eastern side, Happy Valley saw 605 minutes in the five-year period. And then Port Angeles, both central feeder and the eastern feeder, a very similar amount. And then we get a lot more outage minutes when we get out to Silverado, 1182. And then, of course, as you get to the far end for the radio section, you're up to 37, almost at 3,800 minutes, accounting for almost 2% of BPA outages. Wow. Based on customer transmission feeders. So BPA had a total of about 202,000 outage minutes, averaging about 350 per feeder, average over the five-year period. If you look at our PUD, we had 10,167 or 1,452 per feeder average, and that's driven primarily by the two West End feeders and somewhat by the Silverado tap as well. Of course, if you look at the Fairmont, we had no outages, but that is a backup that's not normally serving load. And when we look at the BPA system, there's a number of feeders like this in their system, so you have to be careful when you look at it. Yeah, you can have a feeder in the I-5 corridor serving load with no outage minutes, part of, let's say, a 500 kV circuit, but you also have feeders, BPA feeders, that are not normally serving load. So you have to have a little bit of caution here, but we can do somewhat of analysis and get an idea of where we stand. So if we look at the 581 feeders and we exclude the 4 because they're out a lot, then you get a comparative of where we stand. So if we look at SAFO, as far as the worst feeders, they would be 17 and 18 on the list out of the 577. Silverado would be 39 out of 577. And when you get into the eastern territory, it's around 100, 99, 180 out of 577. So, yeah, we're definitely worse than the average BPA customer.
So what do we do with this? Can we make this case for the Bonneville and ask them to up their game?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll be honest with you. We're somewhat limited on what we can do, but we've been on BPA over the last 3 years. Three years ago, we saw a spike in number of West End outages due to tree contacts. And between our commission and staff, we put a lot of pressure on them, and they removed 1,400 danger trees. They'd gotten behind on their schedule, probably in part due to COVID, and they went out and did a major project to clear out a lot of extra trees, even those outside the right-of-way, and that's due to pressure. Even making a request for outage information that they know comes from our board shows them that we're looking at it. And it tends to get a higher level of attention. The West End problems we went over, I guess, last year, it did involve part of their executive staff on some of the remedies and taking care of the tree issues. So, we can do that, and we try to. But as far as a remedy, maybe there's something else we can do. We'll take a look at it. We looked at other utilities and where we fell in. And, I call this estimated customers with the most outage minutes, because keep in mind, I'm not familiar with the feeders, transmission feeders of all 128 municipalities, co-ops, and PUDs. But you get a sense by regionally what they do have, and a somewhat subjective appraisal would suggest we're probably on outage minutes per customer about number five in a typical year out of the 128, 129 customers. And I put them in what is my order. And if I look at the data, I believe Ferry PUD is worse, Columbia River PUD, Lane Electric Co-op, Fall River Electric Co-op, Denton-Clallam, Penn Orville, and Lincoln Electric. But that's how I would place the order based on this five-year analysis.
But the root cause for these other utilities might be a bit different than ours, huh?
Well, actually, I would say it's very similar. Each of these utilities have substantial number of feeders that are radial. They're not looped like we have, let's say, Happy Valley to Port Angeles Eastern Feeder, where we can actually switch through our transmission system or even the BPA 230 system to provide an alternate path of supply in an outage. That allows us, without the crews coming up here, to limit the outage to, let's say, 40 minutes or an hour, as opposed to, let's say, an 8, 9, 10-hour outage for a crew to come out and find a point of trouble on a radio. So another thing to note is some BPA customers are served through both BPA and Pacific Corp transmission, especially you get into southeastern Washington and eastern Oregon over into Idaho. BPA is not the only transmission customer, and you have to consider that. We're just looking at customer feeders under BPA breakers for this quick high-level analysis. So to give you an idea of where these utilities are, they're really related to where, there's a lot of radials. So you look at us, we have, we're at the end of a 230 kV lines that can be paralleled up to this point, and we can actually parallel and serve load through our transmission until you get to Port Angeles. And you have a similar problem, let's say, in Okanagan or maybe in Ferry and some of these places here. You also have a radio section here that's one of the seven I listed over here east of Eugene. And interestingly, fairly close to Portland, there's some radio feeds here for this utility. And going back for those utilities, Ferry, Columbia River, Lane Electric, Fall River, Cloud PD, Penn Orville, and Lincoln. So that is a common denominator. If you're a radial system, you don't have an alternate supply, you tend to be one of the worst, and we are one of the worst. Now, if we look at our eastern territory, it's not quite as bad, but we're definitely below average there. The ones that tend to have the highest reliability are the ones closest to the red lines. So any questions, like I say, we have the opportunity to go back and look at Outer's information back to 1999. Our knowledge is limited about customers outside of our area, but we have a pretty good idea where we stand after this look at the BPA Outer's information.
And weather events have to play into this too, right? So that.
Well, the common denominator is radial and terrain and tree coverage for the most part.
Yeah.
If you're in the part of the state that there's not a lot of trees and you're in a radial that without tree exposure, you're not as bad. So let's go back here. There's a lot of radial. I mean, there's transmission here. Pacific Corp. This is a radial. This is a radial. These are radials. Idaho Falls is not mountainous here, right in the Idaho Falls area. Over here, these are not seeing nearly as many outages here.
Yeah.
You have some radials here that are feeding through other transmission, but you don't have as much exposure. You don't have the trees and mountains. So that's what it is. We just have to stay on BPA and make sure they do their adequate tree trimming. And every time we have an outage, make inquiries as to why and what's the remedy and keep pushing them on that. I don't think we'll ever get a parallel to the customers. We will get parallel up to our Silverado point of delivery, but beyond that point going out to Sappho, it's just, I just don't see that happening.
Trees and mountains are why we live here. So I guess it's just a consequence.
John, I was hoping that we would be able to come up with some type of ranking like you did and showing that we're in the top five with respect to outages. I do applaud the extra work that Bonneville is doing with respect to the clearing of trees. My contention, or what I'd like to see, is for Bonneville to have a crew a little bit closer to where we are so that there isn't such a long wait for the drive time. And I was hoping that the table that you came up with would give us ammunition to at least go to Bonneville and say, hey, we're one of the worst five with respect to outages, and it's due to the drive time, and use that as an argument to try to get them to have a crew closer. Do you think there's any value in trying to approach Bonneville?
I don't know. It was about 4 or 5 years ago we actually did sit down with Bonneville and propose that. Right now, Bonneville is coming from the Olympia area of Shelton. That's where they dispatch. They come up here, and it takes, by the time they get mobilized and up here, it's easily 3 hours to get out here under adverse circumstances from here to here. And we ask them that, and to be honest with you, anything we do as far as station crew up here, I think they would probably make an assessment against us. Their argument is that they have to station their crews where they can respond to outages, in all directions. And they would deem that as a loss of reliability for other utilities worse than our improvement. But I think we'd have to basically fund a portion of it to get somebody up here. We can go back and talk to them again. But that's my recollection from 5 years ago. Now, they did, for a long time, they had an operator that wasn't even located in Port Angeles. It was actually coming up from, and that's for even switching within their substation. They did put a permanent full-time operator in Port Angeles, and that did mitigate some of our outages and allowing us to switch within our loops. But, like I say, that's a tough sell for BPA.
I know that in the past, Bonneville has been very reluctant to allow our crewmen to do anything on their lines. Do you think if we were to approach them with
having one of our linemen train with BPA so that they might get some confidence that we would have someone up here who wouldn't do anything that would hurt any of Bonneville's equipment or facilities?
Well, we got half of what we requested a number of years ago. We did enter into an agreement that does authorize our crews to work their lines, but it's upon a non-availability. Now, the local operator meets with our crews at Happy Valley, Port Angeles, and especially Sappho every year or two, and we are able to actually perform switching within BPA substations, and we are almost unique in that aspect. They recognize that their operator can't be everywhere, and we can get to Sappho much quicker to do such clearances type work. And that's for the operator to set up working clearances and for work for, you know, both on our system and to potentially utilize switching to isolate our system from theirs for their work. So we do get to do that. Now, we talked to them about the potential of our crews actually doing some of the work. Now, we're limited on materials and some of the stuff they use, but a case where a tree is in the line, we requested we could take action. We already go in and identify problems in advance of their arrival when we can. But there's back in 2014, OSHA implemented a requirement for, I think they call it, information transfer between host contractor, which is the role we'll be filling. And that safety requirement requires a briefing before work is done. So for our crews to work on their system, even if they were going to let us, would require their operator to meet our crews and go over a laundry list of the current status of their electric system, transient overload, any switch devices, grounds, communications, and the challenges of getting that meeting done from Port Angeles to crews out west is probably not going to happen. Although it would happen if there was a non-availability of a crew to respond to our area. It would take a lot of time. It would take every bit as much time it would take a crew to drive from Sheldon up to our area out west. But I think that's probably the excuse, and it's actually a valid excuse, that BPA would use to not allow us to work on their lines.
Well, I think that we should continue to push the rope as much as we can to try to continue to minimize the outage times for our customers. Because I know a lot of that outage time is, windshield time. And so anything that we can do to help minimize that, I suggest that we do.
No, and I certainly, we appreciate our board's interest in it because that does make a difference. It does get higher level attention, and we will broach the subject again, both the potential of getting a crew closer to our area and pointing to the fact that we're number five, the fifth worst in BPA's area. Of course, that's my subjective appraisal, but we're definitely top seven worst. And we're also, talk about the potential of us maybe in advance of storm season or particular events being debriefed on the information transfer that will give us the opportunity, if we have resources available, to go knock a tree or a limb out of the line. That has the most potential.
Okay.
It would have to be predicated upon arranging an information transfer that was valid for the period of time that they operated.
So, John, we had this same kind of discussion about 3 years ago, and you mentioned a lot of these things. Now, is any of the things that you've talked about as BPA's agreed to do and sound like improvements, has any of that happened in the last 3 years, or is this stuff that's goes back years. Just trying to see if we're making any progress, kind of hit on Rick's point. You know, I agree we should keep hitting them, but did we make any progress since our last discussion about this about 3 years ago?
Yeah, 3 years ago, no, basically they missed a tree trimming cycle for their SAFO line due to COVID, we believe. And because of that, we experienced, you know, higher than expected seasonal outages for 2020, 19 and 20. And then we talked to them about it, and that was the point that they came in over a three-month period. I believe at the end of 2020 and 2021 in the spring, they removed 1,400 trees that were potential danger trees to the line. So it did make a difference in that respect.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, sort of an observation. There may be a question. I don't know if it's possible to answer it, but you know, when you compare our outages in the number of minutes, and then you say, well, how does that equate to these, you know, when you have a loss of load probability because of a resource shortage? And it seems to me that what we're going through is far greater than what the statistics are on loss of load probability due to a resource shortage that would affect us. I don't know if you have an observation on that, but
I do. So basically, BPA has a load shedding plan based on voltage stability under adverse loading, and I do know that in Western Washington, I hate to say this, will lose our load. Will be affected before other utilities in our area, meaning SAFO, even Happy Valley will be dropped, then Port Aransas, then Jefferson. We're first in line for their load shedding program due to
overuse. That happen in the last 10 years?
That has never happened.
Never happened.
Yeah, and it would probably only happen under an adverse condition. Let's say an extreme load condition, and one of the 230 kV lines is down.
Okay. As we go forward, resource adequacy becomes more of an issue. Are we talking to these other areas that are experiencing long outages? This may sound a little wonky, but you know, they could stage equipment here and fly their crews in if it met that level of concern.
Well, no, we haven't. I mean, we haven't talked to some of these other utilities across the Northwest share information. But one thing I did notice during the last storm season out, this is not the most recent, but BPA was flying a plane, I believe, to locate points of trouble.
Yeah.
And there's also opportunities even with drones that technically somebody at BPA could fly the system and locate trouble quicker. It's not going to eliminate the drive time, though.
Yeah, the drive time is the killer. Well, we just keep working, keep pressuring them, see if they can come up with some kind of solution, and perhaps we can suggest solutions.
Well, I tell you what, one thing we can do, I'll make sure you get this presentation. Now, when you look at these numbers, these are an estimate because I don't know what other utilities feeders look like. This is my best guess. But you'll have a list of seven utilities, including ours, that share similar characteristics and have the worst BPA outage. And if you're at an event, whether it's Waputa, or whatever, and you have an opportunity to talk to some of these commissioners, bring it up. Talk to them, and maybe that'll start a wider discussion. We try to address transmission outages as part of the BPA contract discussions, but we really didn't have much help among any of the WAPAG utilities. They didn't have the same level of outages we do. Even Port Angeles doesn't have the same level of outages we do, nor does Jefferson PUD, nor does Pacific, nor Grace Harbor or Mason. No, we're definitely the worst for outage minutes in Western Washington.
What about the western part of Jefferson? It's served by us and Grays Harbor. Do they? We don't have that data, I would think.
No, we do. Actually, Mason 1, we have Mason 1 has worse outage information than Mason 3. Really? Jefferson is somewhat enviable because they're fed off the 230 kV line, and only a small portion of Jefferson is fed off the 115. And Mason 1, I believe, has one of their feeders off the 115. But I don't know all the details of those transmission systems.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good.
Well, thank you, John.
Yeah, thanks for digging into that. That's good information. Okay, our next item is the 2022 employee survey. Sean, do you have that?
Yeah, I'm going to share my screen here. Can you all see the big slide?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Second, I'm going to move my... Sorry, my Zoom is... Move this around. Okay. So, commissioners, I sent you a copy a few weeks ago of the results of the employee survey. I believe I've talked to each one of you individually. You've had a chance to kind of look through that. So I'm just going to go over kind of a high-level overview and answer any questions that you might have. So my Zoom is acting up. I'm sorry. Hold on a second. Okay. We conducted our survey for the employees back in March, and we had 77 responses, and out of 26 general questions that we asked, we received 415 general comments, so about an average of 16 employees per question provide a response. We ranked the questions on a numerical system, so what we did is they were broken down from strongly agree, neutral, disagree, and strongly disagree. And so a strongly agree would get 5 points all the way down to 1 point for a strongly disagree. And then when we did that, we broke the results down by departments, and we had 11 departments that we surveyed, and 7 of those 11 departments had a participation rate of 50% or higher. All right, so I'm going to break it down into the top 5 and bottom 5 questions, and it kind of illustrates where we're doing things good, and it also illustrates some areas that we need to provide improvement in. So on the top 5, number 5 was question 9, I have the materials and equipment I need to perform my job well. On this particular question, we actually received the most lengthy comment of all from one of our employees. That person was in operations, and they provided a detailed narrative for how we could become more efficient by investing in newer and safer equipment. So those types of questions get passed on to, like, the superintendents who have had a meeting, and they've reviewed the suggestions, and they're working on practical ways that we can gain efficiency. Overall, the comments on this particular question, very supportive that the district provides the necessary materials and equipment for all of our employees. And as you can see down at the bottom there, only 7 employees said that they disagree with the statement. So, again, top 5, these are things that we're doing extremely well in. The number 4 in the top 5. Yeah, go ahead.
Do you know, I know you don't know the names of the employees, but do you know where they're from? Like if the strongly disagree were linemen, you know, and it was 7 of them, I guess I'd be a little concerned.
Yeah, no. So, Jim, we could break this down by respondent. So we could go in and see what department that they actually worked in.
Okay.
And, yeah, so we had 11 departments, like I said. So just to give you an overview of the departments, we broke it down by operations in Carlsberg, operations Port Angeles, Operations West End, the Water Department, Engineering, Administration, Accounting and Finance, Human Resources, Customer Service, Materials, and IT and Records. So when you look at the different comments, you could go in and see what department they were in, but you didn't know what employee said what, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm asking, because if we know that, then we can see where that problem is, and if that's a certain group of people and not just randomly spread, then we know where to focus.
Exactly. Yep. That's what we're doing.
Yeah, and I think it's important to get the response in these surveys to assure people that it is anonymous. So, but going to the department or job function, that's fine.
Yeah, so number four in the top five was question seven. My supervisor keeps me informed in a timely manner about information I need to effectively perform my work. This question provided some insight that employees are generally very happy with their supervisor and also the communication that they receive from them. I went through the comments on this particular question. You know, some commenters even noted their supervisor by name, saying how appreciative they were of them. We asked them to, you know, not put the names in the future, but it does illustrate that our frontline supervisors are doing a really good job, evidenced by the fact, again, that only seven employees disagreed with this statement overall. Number three in the top five was question 10. My work is sufficiently challenging. Again, we only had one employee here who disagreed with that statement. And reading through the comments, most employees appear to be engaged in their work and are relatively happy. Some did know that they felt a bit overwhelmed with the quantity of the workload, but then they made caveats that saying that they saw it more of a challenge. A couple of commenters even noted how much they love their job at the PUD. So again, very, very positive results on the top five here. Number two, I understand and value the PUD Wellness Reimbursement Program. This is another one where only one employee disagreed with the statement. And for the commissioners, you might not know this, but the Employee Wellness Program is the program that we have here internally that encourages employees to practice a healthy lifestyle by getting active for not only themselves, but also for their families. It reimburses employees for a percentage of purchases like a gym membership, youth athletic fees, sporting equipment like baseball bats, golf clubs. And it's obvious that this benefit was very much appreciated by the employees from the comments that we received on this one. The number one question was question 25. The PUD has excellent benefits. In general, I would say it's safe to say that the employees appreciate our medical, dental, and vision coverage, as the comments here were overwhelmingly positive. Some people commented that they saw the new 410 schedule as a benefit, so it goes beyond just traditional medical, dental, vision, and into flexibility. In fact, right before the meeting today, I had a lineman here in the Carlsberg Operations Center. He called me to thank me about the new 410 schedule. He said it's really made a difference for him and his family, and he really appreciated the district making that change. So overall, top five questions, I think, illustrate where we're doing a very good job. Basically, we just need to continue doing the things that we're doing to make us strong in these areas and maybe shift some of our focus to the areas where we didn't do so good, which is the bottom five, and I'll kind of go over those here in just a minute. But my takeaway from the top five is basically benefits are appreciated by the employees. Our frontline supervisors are very effective in doing a good job. The PUD is doing a very good job providing necessary tools and equipment for our employees, and employees feel challenged and engaged in their work. So out of the five questions, we had 385 responses, and only 18 selected disagree or strongly disagree. So when you put it in that context, you know, less than 5%, I think that illustrates that we're doing very good in those particular areas.
Yeah, we just had a similar thing at Energy Northwest and brought in an expert to conduct the survey and so on. His preface to the results was that no matter what group you survey, you're always going to get 5 to 6% that would disagree. So I think this is kind of typical.
I don't know if I agree with that, Will.
Well, that was the expert talking. I don't know.
I was only kidding. I was being the 5%.
Oh. Okay, well, put you down as strongly disagree.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on to the bottom five questions here. All right, number five in the bottom was question 15. PUD management does a good job considering employee input when making decisions. Reading through the comments, there were a few commenters who noted that the perception in the past was that feedback was solicited from employees, but management didn't always act on that feedback. The comments in general were mixed. Some employees said that, yes, management was doing a good job with this, and some said no. The takeaway here for me, though, is that we've done this survey. Now we need to focus on certain areas to make meaningful improvement. So one thing that we've started to do out of the gate, Nicole has put out a online suggestion box that can be accessed anytime. It's completely anonymous, and we're asking employees who would like to submit specific actionable ways that they see that we can improve. To date, it's only been live for a little over a week, but we've gotten a few responses, so I'm excited to see the suggestions coming in with some ideas. But again, on the positive side here, this is in the bottom five, and we had only 23% who disagreed with the statement, meaning that the other 77% either agreed or were neutral on this statement. So still very good results considering this is a bottom five question, but illustrates that, you know, this is an area that we can put some focus into. Number four on the bottom was, I feel the core values, mission, and vision statements are actively practiced throughout the PUD. Reading through the comments here, one thing that jumped out at me was someone said they didn't even know what the core values were. And obviously, you need to know what those are in order to determine if they're actively being practiced. And since we've hired about a third of our workforce since the beginning of COVID, it's with the social distancing, we've really lost touch with a lot of the personal connections that we used to have here at the PUD. When we used to onboard a new person, human resources would spend the day with them going over, you know, these types of things, the core values, the mission, the vision. And then the employee would go around and visit all of the departments on their first day. They would get introduced and meet everyone. And we just haven't been able to do that. And it's been really unfortunate. And as we thought we were sort of moving out of COVID, we were going to start doing, you know, those types of things again and reinforce our core values, mission, and vision during the onboarding process, which we found to be helpful. But I'm optimistic that a year from now, you'll see improvement in this question. And for those of you that don't know, the core values are an acronym for RESPECT, which is respectful, ethical, safe, proactive, excellent, customer-focused, and team-oriented. And then, of course, our mission is to provide reliable, efficient, safe, and low-cost utility services in a financially and environmentally responsible manner, with our vision being the best utility for our customers. And so the fact that some of our employees didn't know this speaks volumes to the fact that this is an area that we need to put some more focus into.
So is there a clear line of sight between the mission, vision, and values and the key performance indicators to performance evaluation of employees?
Yeah, actually, there is, Will. The RESPECT.
Oh, we lost you. Uh-oh. Is Sean the only one that's frozen? Oh, there's Rick's moving.
Yeah, I'm here. Nicole, can you let Sean know we lost him?
Yeah, I'm going to run down there real quick. Sean Doplane is helping him get connected back again. I guess I could just point out that, yeah, the core values tie directly into objectives and initiatives on the strategic plan. And right now we also have them running on the internal virtual bulletin boards, but we do need to make sure that the new employees understand what those are when they see them up there. You back on, Sean?
Yeah, can you guys hear me now?
Yes.
I don't know what happened. The Zoom just shut down again, so sorry about that. I'm going to share my screen again, if it will let me. There, did that work?
Yeah, we got it.
Okay. Now I lost all my notes. Okay. So I'm sorry, going back to that question, I got cut off there when somebody had a question. Did Nicole answer it?
Yeah, we were just talking about how the core values tie in with objectives and initiatives in the strategic plan. And I also pointed out that we have the core values on rotation on our internal virtual bulletin boards, but I think we can do a better job of letting the new employees who have joined know that that's what they're looking at when they look up there.
Right. Okay. So sorry about that delay. I don't know what happened. Zoom just quit on me. So
it just occurs to me, do we have an orientation when we bring in new people?
We do. There's a whole onboarding process that Human Resources goes through with new employees. And like I said, unfortunately, through COVID, the new employees missed out on a lot. They used to go around and meet everybody, and now with COVID, we've tried to accomplish social distancing. Some people were working from home, so we would hire them and basically send them over to their department, and they missed out on that interaction with all the department heads, the employees. So, yeah, we're trying to get back into that as we hopefully move out of COVID here in the near future.
Yeah.
So question 19 was number 3 in the bottom. The PUD values efficiency and manages its resources to maximize ratepayer monies. Now, going through the comments here, there were some suggestions that we should buy better equipment for the crews and opportunities for better efficiencies and crew structure regarding specific types of jobs. One of the examples they gave was how our underground crew operates, and the superintendents are actually addressing this suggestion right now. We're in the process of hiring a full-time equipment bore operator, which that will free up linemen to focus efforts elsewhere and keep our boring machine running daily. Some of the comments, though, on this one were very nonspecific, and I'm hoping that our new online suggestion box will actually aid in drilling down on how we can improve to move those who disagree to the agree rating for the next survey. So out of 77 responses here, we had 15 who selected some form of disagree on this one. So again, good, still good. Number 2, PUD policies, procedures, the employee handbook are applied equitably to all employees. This one was interesting. One thing that jumped out to me, we had 2 comments that used the word favoritism. And then after reading through some of the other comments, the term inconsistent showed up. So my observations are that some supervisors have handled situations differently than another supervisor. And so employees felt that treatment is inconsistent regarding the same type of circumstance. An example that was given basically was that during COVID, you had some departments who were well equipped to work from home. And then you had others like operations who just simply couldn't work from home just due to the nature of their work. And so some employees felt some disparity with this. Jamie and I have talked specifically about this question. And, you know, as COVID restrictions start to lift, we're going to plan on some in-depth supervisor training, which will also include some of our foremen that are out in the field and operations. Jamie and her team does a really good job assisting our supervisors in handling personnel issues. However, you know, there are times, even on the advice of counsel sometimes, that we handle things a certain way. And the tough thing about those unusual circumstances is that we can't always share the details with employees. So on the surface, it might look like an employee is getting special treatment or favoritism, But if we focus on what we can control here, I plan to bring in some additional training between managers and supervisors and actively pursue that for improving this with the next survey. And then finally, the number one question was employees are held accountable for not following the policies and procedures in employee handbook. This one, even though it was the bottom, there weren't a lot of comments. However, some of the same themes from the previous question resonated here, and I think they're somewhat tied together. We definitely need to do a better job about training our supervisors and holding ourselves more accountable. One of the hardest things, I think, for managers or supervisors is to tell your employee no on something and having those tough conversations. And some people really struggle with this. So additional training will only help us get stronger, you know, as an organization in holding ourselves and our employees accountable. On the positive side, though, again, this was the very worst question that we scored, and only 27% disagreed or strongly disagreed, meaning that over 70% didn't disagree with the statement. So putting it in that context, the district did perform very well on the employee survey, and I'm very pleased with the results.
How do you interpret the ambivalence at yellow bar? It's like almost, what, 40%? They just don't care.
Yeah, you know, when you break it down by tenure on some of the questions, Will, employees who are relatively new that have been here less than five years.
Yeah.
Some of the comments they made were, I just haven't been here long enough to rate this, or some people were indifferent. And, you know, there's opportunities for us to improve for sure.
And that's the right position. If they haven't been here long enough to make a judgment, then that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. So the takeaway here on the bottom five, in the comments, uneven or inconsistent communication what seemed to be the underlying cause of many concerns. There was perceptions of favoritism, perception that some employees need to be held more accountable, inconsistent application of policies and procedures across departments, and out of the 385 responses, 89 selected disagree or strongly disagree. So on the worst five questions, we still had over 75% of employees who didn't disagree with the statements. Pretty remarkable for being the bottom five with those results. As far as action, kind of some bullet points here. Employees need to be heard and action taken. You know, even though the results were very good, employees still need to be heard. We can't just thank them for taking the survey. We need to show them that we're making progress for improvement. I'm in the process of meeting with multiple departments to discuss results and gain actionable steps for improvement. I've already met with three departments to discuss the survey and find ways that we can improve. I've been very pleased with those meetings. Feedback has been very productive. We're actually taking some steps immediately on things, little things even, like uniforms in the water department. I didn't know they didn't have uniforms or clothing over there, so we're rectifying that. There's been some larger items like how we can run stock in our materials department, and I know that we're having meetings on how we can improve there. And these ideas are all coming from the frontline employees who have great ideas for how we can improve and become more efficient. Eliminate bottlenecks in the flow of information. There is definitely some bottlenecks, as you can see from the comments, with how information flows. And not that it's an excuse, but I know COVID really hurt us here. We are working on ways we can improve, including emphasis on this topic during manager and supervisor meetings. We need to set the example of effective communication at the top. And as we begin to remove COVID restrictions, we can reintroduce things like we used to do a breakfast roundtable where once a month, we'd bring employees in, they'd meet with the general manager, human resources, and one person from every department would get to interact with employees that they don't normally get to talk to. And so it was a great way to build relationships. We'll do more robust on our employee orientations when we onboard, more robust training and departmental cross-training as well. Evaluate staffing concerns related to operations. In all of my meetings so far, there's been staffing concerns that have been brought up, and I know that these have budgetary and rate impacts, so we are evaluating them very carefully, and hopefully we can come to some ideas for how we can be more efficient, but staffing has been brought up as a concern. And then lastly, redouble efforts to ensure equal enforcement and application of our policies and procedures. We need to ensure that managers are, you know, using equal enforcement and application of all of our policies and procedures. And again, this really comes down to training and just being familiar with the district policies and procedures. So we're working on this too. That's a high level overview, but I'm very pleased with the results and thankful to all the employees who did take the time to complete the survey. And I believe this is a great benchmark for where to start on the ways that we can improve. And it will give us a good gauge for when we do this again next year to show areas that we've improved. So any questions from the commissioners on this?
Yeah,
well,
Sean.
Go ahead, Jim.
The comment on your last slide about go back one.
Sure.
So I don't misquote it. Staffing concerns. Now, was that across the board or in certain, since you know by different offices, was that in certain areas that had staffing concerns more than maybe everybody else in general?
It was across the board. I've met with the water department. I've met with the materials department. I've met with the accounting and finance group. And yeah, that has materials. I've met with the materials department and that has been a theme, that's reoccurred, and it's something that we're looking into. But again, those have budgetary and rate impacts. And so we need to carefully evaluate, positions and maybe there's things that we can do to become more efficient. Like several years ago, we moved to an enterprise software system that's really helped the district be more efficient. So, you know, there's things that we need to evaluate before we just blanket hire more people.
Okay, thanks. And then I guess the observation that you sort of made in the beginning about on your three of your conclusion bullets were related to that kind of maybe favoritism or something. And if we know, if that's across the board, okay, that's just a general thing we need to work on. But if it's in a certain area or two, that that will help you kind of focus in on what remedies might be available to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Though the comments particular came out of a particular department and they're being addressed immediately. So yes, that is something that we're focusing on.
Okay, great.
So how long has it been since we've had an all-employees meeting? I know, but I think even before COVID, it was a year or two since we did that before COVID. Huh?
I believe the last one was in 2018, but Nicole can probably correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Boy, that's a good question here. Let me...
Well, the only reason I ask, we can't do it now, I know. Can't do it in the short term because of the COVID thing, but at some point it might be beneficial, especially since you have a lot of new employees.
Yeah, I mean, if all works out good, we typically do them around April, May, every other year. So if all works out, we can do one in that time frame next year would be the plan.
Probably the
third. We had intended and were planning to have held one in May of 2020, and then, of course, that got canceled, so... And we haven't been able to have that since then. The fairgrounds is only this year starting to reopen their buildings where we hold it. So, you know, hopefully next year that would be fantastic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everything was canceled in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Good job.
That's pretty good, Sean. I think it's good results.
Yeah, I was just going to echo that. I think we need to always remember that our employees are our most important commodity, and we need to do our best to make sure that they're taken care of.
Well said, Rick. I couldn't agree more. Thank you.
Okay. Is that all you had, Sean?
That was all I had, unless there was any other questions.
Questions, comments?
None for me.
Okay, board action items. T, did you capture some?
I did, Will. Let me bring them up here. We have staff is to look into an attachment that was shared at a recent WAPED meeting regarding utility self-assessment for provider of choice. And the second item was going forward, approved board minutes will accumulate on the website instead of being removed as they currently are being on a rolling annual basis.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, T. All right, back to comments from the public. Nicole, do we have any hands up?
Let me see. I'll give it a second for somebody. Oh, Brian Brad has got his hand up.
Thank you. First off, I just want to make a comment regarding Sean's presentation. When I worked at Keyport, we had a program, and I'll show you this cup I keep on my shelf. It's called the Beneficial Suggestion Program. It was very popular amongst the employees and saved them quite a bit of money and fixed a lot of problems. I'd be glad to share the information with you there. It had improve, it was called ideas, improve, devise, eliminate, amend, and save. And they had sections under each one of those headings. But what I really wanted to address was I've been watching with alarm and incredulity what's happening on the Colorado River. And as you know, the Glen Canyon Dam, they're pretty much just about out of water. I think they're virtually at dead pool, which means they'll be either later this summer, definitely by next year, if they don't get any more water, that they won't be generating power from there. And it's also having a ripple effect all throughout the system. And I'm concerned, I wonder if you thought that there might be significant impacts on the delivery of energy from BPA, how that might affect its customers in the future because of, a demand, a request for power from that part of the grid.
Well, going forward, when we have a Western RTO, it may be an issue, but right now it's really not. So, thank you, Brian. Do we have other questions or comments?
I do not see any more hands raised.
Okay, good. So, we do not have an executive session. If there's no other business to come before the commission, we will adjourn. Thank you all.
Thank you, commissioners.
Thanks.